Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Srila Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Saparikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Jiu Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavandam Ki Jai. Navadeeptam Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswatmat Ki Jai. Ganga Devi Jamuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Om Vishnu Pad Vishva Varenya Srilasi Bhakti Vidanda Shami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Nirmal Acharya Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Bhimal Avadhut Maharaj Ki Jai. Seva Vrinda Ki Jai. Samavira Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Nithai Go Premanande Hari Bhom. Any questions?
It's come up from a question. But here, worry if it's not disturbed the flow, like today's Varaha, the difference. And if you want to say about, speak something about Varaha, that he will give this question for the next time, but if it's possible, he can ask.
Yes, what is the question? Okay.
His question's about artificial intelligence. And does the consciousness come down into that particular, I don't know, mainframe or entity or what it is, and how?
You mean assuming it went to its proposed conclusion?
Yes. I mean, he just wants to understand how artificial intelligence works in the sense of.
Well, I'll just say it in a simple way, that because I'm not a scientist, I'm not an AI person. I've known some people who are, but I give you my own. And again, I'm not talking about the level of development as at present. I'm talking about what they hope it will one day achieve, which means, and you could say an artificial living being. If you can do that, who thinks on their own everything. And so giving them the benefit of a doubt, which is a big doubt to give the benefit of, in the history of giving the benefit of doubts, no one has ever given more benefit of a doubt than I'm giving right now. To paraphrase something that's been said, is I will say that you can create circumstances that a soul will enter, that a life, a living being, that a conscious soul will enter. And so you're back to square one, which is what people do to begin with. They create circumstances whereby a soul enters that body. So you'll still have conscious living beings coming together, creating circumstances that enable a soul to take shelter of that form. And this is giving a great benefit of a doubt. Because otherwise, what is, biological reproduction? It's whatever's going on the mundane side of things. We're told in the Bhagavatam that the consciousness of the man and the woman at the time of conception attracts a particular soul to take shelter in that body. That's what happens. And I don't really want to develop this theme too much. Sometimes Gurudev would say, we should train the children in Brahma Sanghita. And what he means is, it describes there in the beginning What to speak of this? What's more fascinating is what's described in the Brahma Sangita. It says that Vishnu, by Krishna, Vishnu means Krishna here, Krishna's Vishnu Tattva expansion, Vishnu. He cannot directly interact with the material nature, with Maya, with the mundane. So how does this take place? Sometimes, tomorrow we'll be talking about Nityananda Prabhu. Sometimes Sankarsan is described also as Jiva, meaning the sum total of all the Jivas are there. Why? Because Baladev is Krishna's first other. The first other than Krishna. Sometimes Guru Maharaj uses these terms. These are not accidental words. Saying his first other is Baladev. Sometimes he describes Shiva as an other. So he's saying, even in the sense of why he's the leader of the so-called opposition, because it's the first thing other than Krishna. So in a subtle way, you have to think about this carefully. Baladev, he's sometimes opposed to what Krishna wants. In Leela, in pastimes, Krishna wants to proceed this way, Baladev's got another idea. Right? But they're divine ideas. Like Vrindavan Das Thakur, Krishna Das, Kaviraj Goswami, say when Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya are engaged in playful banter, or mock argument. And of course, you know, Bengal. There were Bengalis of the Sahajya persuasion who they try to make an issue out of this. They take their arguments very seriously, what is said there. So much so, if you wonder how delicate, how rare, how perfect is Krishna consciousness, Advaita Acharya, speaking of sons. Then he has six sons. And we're told three get it and three don't. They're sons of Advaita Acharya. The ones we glorify to the extreme are Achyutananda, Gopal. I always forget the other one. What is his name? We know Achyutananda, he's famous, young dancer at Rath Yatra. Also when someone asked Mahabhu, asked Advaita, who is Nimai Mahaprabhu's guru? Who is that, Ishwar Puri? And Achyutananda, the five-year-old boy, comes into the room and says to his father, who's Mahavishnu avatar? Just keep that in the background. This boy, how higher the little five-year-old devotee boy is chastising the Mahavishnu avatar. So you tell me what Krishna consciousness is. What kind of intelligence is that? So, and he's saying, Father, what nonsense you're talking. Say, Mahaprabhu has a guru? What do you mean? Who, you know, when by his outward going breath, because he's Mahavishnu, he should know. Right? All the innumerable universes are being generated. He could say, well, I thought I did that. Jagadkarta. I thought I make universes. Think about it. Someone who generates universes through his pores. How many pores are there? A lot, last I checked. I don't know what they say on Google, but there's a lot. A lot of pores. From his pores. And what if they look like black holes? And so these universes coming out of these pores. You know, that's why they're insects trying to figure things out. I said this before, I think some people misunderstand. It's like the insects on Tolstoy. Have you ever heard this example? Okay. So I'm saying the insects, they're like on his skin and with their antenna they're touching the skin and they're trying to measure and understand who he is. And so they have readings that we could say, so we're taking it that their antennae are calibrated, they're accurate. So they're giving accurate readings in terms of what they can perceive, just like a scientist. They're saying, in terms of what we can perceive with our method of investigation, you know, this is what we see. That's right. But that's everything, or that there are certain things that through your methods you're not perceiving, that's another question. You know, like those insects, they're perceiving, they're touching, and so they're touching the skin, the hair, and making, on the basis of what they've observed, they're drawing conclusions, publishing journals, right? You know, in the insect, you know, scientific journal, like what we've come so far, you know. But what's who that being is way beyond this type of measuring ability, right? Method of observation. That's why you have the sloka, jnane priyasam udupasanam anta eva jivanti sammukharitam bhavadiya vartam. Brahma's conclusion. Stop trying to interrogate divinity. Stop trying to interrogate the infinite. You'll get a better understanding by hearing from authentic sources. Shabda praman, sound evidence, divine sound descended. Amnaya, that's the beginning of Bhakti, you know, the Dashmul. Amnaya begins with Amnaya, revealed truth. If you can't allow for revealed truth, you can't approach this. That's the starting point. The infinite making itself known to the finite. If before we get to anything else about Krishna playing the flute, stop before we go there. We have to, do you acknowledge the possibility that the infinite can make itself known to the finite? You say, no, I deny that. Then proceed no further. But if you say, all right, the infinite can make itself known to the finite, well, I guess if it's infinite and has infinite possibility, I'll allow for that. Maybe I don't understand it completely, but I'll say, the infinite can make itself known to the finite. Then we say, oh, okay, Amnaya Prahat Tattvam, what is that? Harim Iha, Param. Sarvashaktim, Rasabdim, etc. First thing, revealed truth. So the method of the infinite making itself known to the finite is what you called revealed truth. So if you accept the principle that there can be revealed truth, then in that revealed truth, which is descending from the infinite making itself known to the finite, there are all these descriptions. Whether you want to talk about Krishna or Varaha, any particular avatar, what is the revealed truth, therein is described the qualities, characteristics, names, forms, pastimes, etc. of divinity. So that you can approach that once you accept this principle that the infinite can make itself known to the finite. If we disallow that principle, then all the other discussion is off the table. So, like the Varaha avatar. It's interesting. See, we have stereotypical ideas about what we think an avatar or an incarnation would be on the basis of however it is we've conceived divinity. Oh, so what I was going to say, just to finish that example. So as those insects are, in the most superficial way, analyzing Tolstoy. So through mind and intellect, we're trying to take the most superficial aspect of manifestation, the objective world, and project whether or not there's a divinity, an infinite, or things like that. And interestingly, using this particular example, Srila Guru Maharaj compares some descriptions in the Vedas as being, he said, like hair or nails or skin, the least aspect. So there's a parallel there with divinity. So we'll read some Vedic descriptions that are very impersonal, or they don't appear to be indicating Krishna conception overtly. Oh, so anything about stereotypes. So if we look at the Dash Avatar, the forms that are taken, there's some divine play there. This, as we told previously, with Kurma. Prishte Brahmyada Mandaragiri Graba Yakandu Yanam Nidralo Kamatakrite, the sloka, saying the devas, the demigods, they have trouble churning the ocean of milk. He appears as a tortoise who has an itch on his back. This is divine play. You would think, well, if he's omnipotent, he can do anything. So certainly he can scratch his back. Because they used to pose this question, can God make a rock so big he can't lift it? Aha! That's supposed to, you go, oh, I'm an atheist now, thank you. Gee, that just broke me totally. You know. No, I mean, yeah, you can make one so big you can't lift it, like Krishna, when the ladies, the gopis, they ask Krishna, like, oh, go pick that, he go, sometimes he can't lift it. And then he can lift Govardhan Hill, if he chooses to. So he can do both of those. But my question would be, Could he have an itch on his back that he can't scratch? And the theistic answer is yes. Right? The atheists say, well, if he can't scratch his own back, I'm not going to believe in that kind of a God. Like Nietzsche saying, you know, if there is a God, if I was to believe in a God, he must be an excellent dancer. So I once said that Guru Maharaj's conception toward the end of the Prema Dhamma Stotram, reality must be dancing, he could present Krishna conception of Mahaprabhu in such a way that Nietzsche would embrace. That's because he said he'd have to be an excellent dancer. So he thought he was mocking, but actually, in an inverted way, it's like Saraswati takes what they say that was intended to be insulting or inimical or whatever, and it turns into some sort of glorification. Yes, Vrindavana Natabara. You know, we sing it every day, Nietzsche, that he's an excellent dancer. It's like, we've got that. And you say, if I only knew. You can still know. So that's the case. So can he? Yes. And he can't scratch his own back. The omnipotent, supreme personality of Godhead, who can do anything and everything by his own divine will, he cannot scratch his back. That's lila, which Guru Maharaj said once means meaningless pastimes. You could say it in many ways, but he said like meaningless pastimes. Like Oscar Wilde said, in his introduction to the picture of Dorian Gray, he said, all art is quite useless. Right? And people who don't get Oscar Wilde, they went like, oh, how can you say that? Art is good, you know, foolish. They didn't realize he was making another point, as usual, through the clever manipulation word. All art is quite useless. This is his way of saying reality is for itself and by itself. it cannot fulfill some other purpose. That's just what he was saying. If it's real art, if it's the real thing, it has no purpose to fulfill other than its own. It exists for itself and by itself. Right? It's not, you say, well, you know, you can also use this thing as a nutcracker. It's good for cracking nuts. Right? Or the revolution theology of certain Christian monks in Latin America. They're trying to say, you know, Jesus was actually a communist. As Bengalis would say, you know, Mahaprabhu, he was trying to destroy the social, the caste system. Really? Yeah, Mahaprabhu, they'll say, he was also a communist. Did you know that? Mahaprabhu was a communist, we're happy to say. Why? He said, Naham Vipra, Narasput, what is it? Narasput, Napi Vaishan, Nashudra. Where he says, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Shudra, I, you know. But they leave off the other half. Yeah, he did say that. What's the other half? Gopi, Bartur, Padakamalayo, Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa. What about that part? He said, I'm, you know, aspiring to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Braja Gopis who belong to Krishna. That part they didn't give. So, what does that allow for, that he can't scratch his own back? For the devotees, for seva. So, what's the answer? They say, I know, and if these are going to be pastimes of divinity, they say, yeah, let's put a mountain on his back, because he was rather large. Did I point that out before? In case you thought he was like a small mountain. Right? So he's big enough, and they go, let's put this mountain. And it's like a special mountain too. The Mandara. So they put the mountain on there, and like, let's take this gigantic serpent and wrap it around him and use it as a churning rod. Because they want to get, like, the, you know, if you've seen churning, there's milk, the churning rod, and you go like this, put the rope around, and then what happens is the cream comes to the top. So they want to get the cream. The creme de la creme means nectar, amrita. Right? Now, amrita, like the lowest conception of it, is immortality, like in the general sense. Generic, off-the-shelf immortality. Like, in other words, not to die. But that's not the real nectar, Prabhu. As when I said to Guru Maharaj, because this sloka appears in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and I just read the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and I said to Guru Maharaj, I don't understand. You know, with all due respect to the Kurma avatar, why this is here? You figure it's the end of the Bhagavatam. It's like a crescendo. It's going to culminate in something really unique and specific and conclusive. And it shows my own ignorance within that question. So I said, I don't understand. This was earlier on in the 8th canto, I think. But why is it appearing here again? Like now we're, here's the final thing, the final slokas are going to be given. And then again, making reference to Kurma avatar. And when I asked that, you know, he thought, but it's not like he had a prepared answer. Also, he thought, like for a long time he was silent. And I thought, maybe I'm taxing his brain, because it was in the afternoon. So I actually was starting to say, we could take this up at another time. You know, but he was thinking very deeply about it. So it wasn't just a question he'd answered 100 times. Really? And then finally he said, what was the object of the devas and the asuras? They wanted amrita. Right? This was their goal. Said the reason this is coming again is to show the real Amritam is rasa, is madhura rasa. And that's the subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it culminates in. So really, under the guise of seeking Amrita, immortality, these things, he's saying, what it's saying is the creme de la creme of all nectarine substances is the Shruti Saram, there, of the cream of all things to be heard, which is Bikriditam Brajabadu Viridam Chabishnu Shradhan Bato Nushunayad Atabarnayedya. It's unbelievable. Advaya Gyan. The Bhagavad, it's the unified principle. It's the unified field. Right? Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabhi. This is it. Om. This is it. So, it's hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Vikriditam Brajabhaduridam Cha Vishnu. Why Vishnu? Because if you hear Krishna, if they use Krishna, then you'll say, oh, Krishna, is he really God, divinity? He appearing like a young boy. Young boy, so many girls. So they used Vishnu here, in this sense. Sometimes Vishnu means God, right? Not Lakshmi Narayan, Vishnu. Sometimes Vishnu is used to indicate God. These are the pastimes of God, of divinity. And if you hear them perfectly, your mind will be blown. Your mundane mind will be blown away for good. And your spiritual mind will come out. So, for Varaha Dev, the earth is lost in the nether regions. There are many Varahas, we should say also. And interestingly, in the Bhagavatam in third canto, Maitreya Rishi, perhaps, and it might be Vishwanath's commentary, saying that he talks about the Sveta Varaha, white. Sometimes Varaha is white, sometimes red, different colors. He combined two pastimes. One is saving the earth from the nether regions of the universe, the Garbhadak waters, and the other is fighting with Hiranyaksha. There are two different pastimes. He told them as one. And why not? They can be Achintya Bheda Bhed. They can be. But it's interesting. So when the earth is lying there in the so-called nether regions, the bottom of the universe, in other words, earth is normally here, heavenly planet, you know, now it's been put down there. It's in a difficult situation. The earth is in trouble. She and Varahadev, because of being a boar, he has a keen sense of smell. Right? So he seeks out the earth through smelling. I'm going to say again, no, but he's God. He knows everything. He's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipotent. That's why meaningless pastimes. They're lila. There's no, he doesn't need to do that. That's his play. He likes to do it that way. And ultimately, once Guru Myers wrote me in a letter, because, you know, he's so fond of Hegel and always praising Hegel, and Hegel got a lot of Sukriti from Guru Myers. But ultimately, he told me, what his flaw was that he couldn't accommodate lila. He thinks it has to be thesis, antithesis, synthesis, forms a new thesis, antithesis, synthesis, you know. Same, but in lila, it doesn't work that way. So anyway, Varaha, he, by the scent of smell, he comes and with his tusks lifts up the earth and puts her and her rightful position. And we hear in Brihad Bhagavatamritam, as Gopa Kumar is going to the different layers of the universe, the eighth, when he gets to the final, perhaps the eighth layer, that's kind of like Varahadev's plane, and they're Bhumi, the earth and Varaha, they're like consorts. And interestingly, to see a connecting thread through these pastimes, when Krishna goes to Mathura, right, for the, what is it, Mala, the means the wrestling arena, like Kamsa's Olympics. So, on the way, before they arrive, we're told Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, first they meet Kamsa's tailor, right? And you can think, this, a chance meeting like this with the personality of Godhead, this would be, you would think, every living entity's dream come true. Somehow Krishna makes even your worst nightmare a good thing. So he asked that, they asked the tailor, oh, because they're simple village boys. You know, you go to the city, right, we all, you're supposed to put on some nice clothes, right? We do that too. And so they're in the big city, Mathura, these country boys from Vrindavan. And they ask the tailor, he's got all these beautiful clothes, if they could have some. And he's like, what? What audacity? These are the clothes of the king of Mathura, you know, King Kamsa. Or as they say in Hindi movies, they always go, Maharaj Kams ki jai ho. Maharaj Kams ki jai ho. So Maharaj Kamsa, anyway, Kamsa, we say, they say Kamsa, you say Kamsa, I say Kamsa, you say Hamsa, I say Hamsa. Kamsa, Hamsa, Paramahamsa. So he's insulted these boys, you think, these impudent boys. And we're told, here, there's not a whole lot of drama here, just Krishna takes his hand and goes like that. We do this sometimes too, except when Krishna did it, the nail, he just cut his head off. Now I know what you're thinking. The all-merciful person, why is he doing this? It's one of his pastimes. Anyway, sometimes Guru Maharaj would say, nip it in the bud. Some things you just have to, like, nip it in the bud. Before that man could do any more damage to himself, he's liberated. Light, his soul's in the sky. He's got a, he becomes a liberated soul for insulting Krishna. For then, what do they want to make the point? Well, then what would happen if you, like, liked Krishna? Or served him, or offered him something. If you get liberated from, you know, the same, ahobakiyam stanakalat kutam, kambadayalam sharanam brajema. But then they come to Kubja, who's also known as Trivakra. She's a hunchback, bent in three places, this hunchback lady, right? Who, if you look closely, was actually like a beautiful hunchback lady. But nonetheless a hunchback lady, so everyone's thinking, oh, she's not attractive. But she's in charge of oils and perfumes for the king. She also keeps these fine, fine oils for Maharaj Kamsa. But when Krishna and Balaram approach her, dear lady, she's thinking, oh, my best oils. And she gave Balaram's complexion, oh, this will be very good for you, Krishna. Oh, Sham, you know, this will be like they do. She's offering the best thing she has to them automatically from her heart. And the Bhagavatam commentators tell us that she is Boo Shakti. And this is interesting. Bhu, like in Bhumi, like the earth. Why did Krishna descend? Yada yada hi dharma syaglani bhavati bharata. No, to relieve the burden of the earth. The earth is overburdened. So being, she's also, we're told, an expansion of Satyabhama, the Dwarka queen. But she's Bhu Shakti. So since she's like the earth personified, the weight of all these demoniac kings and personalities have bent her over that she's a hunchback. That's why she's hunchbacked. Because we're going to think, why should Krishna mean a hunchback? Everything in Krishna Leela has, like, plays out on multidimensionally. So she's hunchbacked due to the burden of all these sinful kings in the world. But like Varaha, with his tusks, he restored the earth to her natural position. Krishna, accepting nicely her gifts of oils and perfumes, he, like, everyone wants to Krishna's lotus feet. There's a thousand slokas about it, stories, Lakshmi Devi doing austerities. Right? Here, Krishna takes his lotus feet and steps on top of her feet. Then, with his two fingers, like the tusks of Varaha, puts on her cheek and goes, and straightens her out, and she's this beautiful, inconceivably beautiful woman who's also at the touch of Krishna and now infused with erotic sentiments. Like in the sloka, Vindaranya Supada Ramanam Pravishad Gita Kirti. When Krishna and Balaram are entering the forest of Vrindavan, their lotus feet are touching the earth. And it said, Swapada, their feet, Ramanam. Ramanam means the earth is shivering in conjugal ecstasy due to the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna. And once asked Guru Maharaj and Gurudev if Mahaprabhu ever went to Kolkata. And he said, in Varaha Nagar. It's north of Calcutta, if you look on a map. It's not too far from Dum Dum Park. It's called Varaha Nagar. I'm just thinking of Varaha, things that come to my mind. So, and the Mat Shalagram. Normally, we're not, Guru Maharaj is not recommending Shalagram worship, but the Govardhan Shila for various reasons. But because the Shalagram Shila requires, as we told the other day, if a Dvaita bows before one that's not real, it shatters. This is a very serious thing and really should be for the qualified Brahmins, and each one indicates some particular type of worship. It's for experts. So there was a Shalagram of Lakshmi Varaha at like the temple of one of his godbrothers. And since its arrival, because the unqualified were worshipping, there was quarreling and fighting in the mat. So then they took it to another mat. They thought, we're not qualified. Then fighting and quarreling broke out in that mat. So then finally they were like, they came to Guru Maharaj and said, you take it. You're the only person we can think of who can like handle this. So in that way, Lakshmi Varaha came to Guru Maharaj and he put on the altar and said, to keep him pacified, every day some param anna, some sweet rice, must be offered. And one day we hear about Nimai Pandit. You know, Mahaprabhu, he's come to experience Bhakta Bhav, sometimes Devi Bhav, but ultimately Radha Bhav, which you could say is the ultimate Bhakta Bhav, Devi Bhav, Mahabhav. But while in Navadvipa as Nimai Pandit, especially as he's getting more involved in the Nam Sankirtan and his devotional side is coming out. Before he was in Vidyara Vilas, the pastimes of a scholar. Anyway, one day he enters the mood of Varaha and he goes to the house of Murari Gupta and, you know, knocks on the door. And he opens the door and there's Mahaprabhu as Varaha avatar. Like, come on in. And he comes in and everyone is astonished. And he sees the big, you've seen in India, the water pitcher. There's some kind, they're big, round clay pot, like, especially in the old days, where they would keep drinking water. And he goes in the corner and lifts it up like it's the earth. And Murari Gupta and all the goodies. And he says, Murari, give some prayers, some glorification. And he's so shocked and astonished. He thinks, how can I possibly glorify you? If Anantadev, who has 1,000 mouths, has been glorifying you since before the beginning of time and hasn't reached the limit of your glories, how can I properly glorify you? But that's the prayer. That's the glorification. The devotee thinks they can't properly, but by his describing why he cannot properly glorify him, it's such beautiful glorification. If Anantadev, with his thousands of mouths, has been glorifying you since the before the beginning of time, because this is the world of time and space, before that, and hasn't reached the limit of your glory, then what can I say that would be proper? Mm-hmm. Any other question? Avishuddha Buddhaya Yenye Arvindaksha Vimuktamanina Stvayashta Bhavad Avishuddha Buddhaya Aruhya Krishchena Parampadam Tatat Patantiyadho Anadrita Jasmad Angraya. In the 10th canto, the demigod's prayer is saying Avishuddha Buddhaya means contaminated intelligence. I want to conclude, there's artificial intelligence, and now we're going to deal with contaminated intelligence. So they're saying, what is the flaw of those who appear to be so intelligent, they're doing so, and elevating, they're going, hi. Anadrita jasmai angraya. If they neglect the service of your lotus feet, again they come down into this world. Vimukta manina. They only think they're liberated. It's not real. Because mukti or hidbanyata rupam svaropena vivasiti. Real mukti, real liberation, is to serve you and your devotees. We should be thrilled. We're being told indirectly. We have a part to play in the pastimes.